The following interview was recorded by the Gawler Broadcasting Association as part of the Gawler Oral History Project.
Welcome to another oral history podcast, and I'm here today with Judy Gillett Ferguson, retired principal, but a leading light of Gawler and a woman who's been very, very involved in many, many things. And Judy specifically is here today to talk about her involvement with the Vietnam Moratorium. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you.
And I'll start off by asking just, I guess, a little bit of background to the moratorium itself and how you got involved. So,
well, for the first time, an overseas war that Australians were involved in was televised into people's sitting rooms every day in full colour. And they could not hide the atrocities that were happening, particularly to the Vietnamese people, you know, the use of Agent Orange and and other awful things. And I think people thought, why? Why are we doing this? The story that, you know, the domino theory that because it was going to be a communist country, they'd all end up making us a communist country. I mean, that was just crazy stuff. And people saw through that, particularly people who were at universities. A lot of the moratorium initiatives came from the two universities in Adelaide anyway, because there were only two then, Flinders and Adelaide, and other people who had been involved with peace movements like I had. I had been involved in the anti-A-bomb tests, including, you know, leafleting homes and talking to people. So my involvement in the peace movement went right back to the sort of late 50s, I suppose you'd say. So it was a natural thing for people like me who were involved with the peace movement, people like the Quakers and the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. It was a natural thing for them to say, look, this is a horrendous war and it's got to stop. And then if you put another layer on top of that, that they were sending 20-year-old men without any choice, conscripted, if their numbers were pulled out of a barrel. I mean, what is that about? Horrible. I mean, it was really horrible.
And Australia had a long history of resistance to conscription.
Yes.
We, you know, voted against it twice during World War One. It was something that we, I think Australians in general, did not support. And then to be conscripted, I guess, for a war that most Australians knew very little at the time about.
That's right. If you'd ask people where Indochina was, they would, most people in the street wouldn't have had a clue.
No. People didn't travel then like they do now.
Not so much, no.
Yeah. What was the demographic of the Vietnam Moratorium? Was it mostly
I would say it was mainly students, but as the fight against, not conscription, but the fight against, I guess it was conscription, but the lottery took hold, then the mothers of those boys became involved, and I got involved with that. I was a lot younger. I was sort of in between. I was too old to be a university student and too young to be a mother of a 20-year-old, although I had four children at the time, but they were all school age. Yeah, so it just became a much broader movement and older women became involved because of this cruel and totally arbitrary selection of men. And then, of course, also there were a lot of men who fought the conscription and either went to jail or went into hiding. And that women's group, which was called Save Our Sons, a good acronym, SOS, which I was involved in, they helped protect some of those men that went into hiding.
The Vietnam Moratorium in Adelaide was spearheaded by Brian Medlett, Professor
he
Brian
was
Medlett.
One of them.
One of them.
And Lynn Arnold. He was another. Lynn Arnold was very prominent as well. He became a Premier of the state eventually.
Yeah. So he was a Quaker.
The Quaker movement was very anti-war, and very visible and organised.
They were pacifists, I know, during World War I as well.
That's right,
Perhaps less so during World War II, although I think they still were.
A lot of them went into non-combating, so driving ambulances and hospital orderlies, that kind of thing.
Yes.
In this war, the Vietnam War, they were totally opposed to it.
Yes.
And also, like the other organisations, helped protect young men who said, no, I'm not going.
Did you ever meet Brian Medlin at the time? He was quite a character, I believe.
Not personally. I mean, I saw him from a distance. You know, I saw him, but I didn't know him. Whereas Lynn Arnold I actually got to know because he became Minister of Education, and so I got to know him through my teaching.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he seemed like a very genuine person.
Lovely man. Really lovely man,
So What memories do you have of your days? Any special memories?
I think probably one of the memories is the incredible force of people coming out into the street, in literally in their thousands. In the first year or so, a lot of abuse from the footpath, particularly almost entirely from middle-aged men, but that abated. As people became more aware, they realised what was going on, and that opposition sort of didn't occur quite so much. I remember a silent vigil at Adelaide Airport when the first men were sent by plane to Vietnam, the first guys, and we had aprons. Because placards were banned, we made aprons with, you know, stop the war in Vietnam and stuff on them, save our sons, yeah.
Were you living in Gawler at the time?
No. I was living in Dover Gardens, actually.
Right, yeah. Yes. But it was very much a whole state. People would travel to go to those demonstrations.
They did, yeah. Yes. And there were smaller moratoriums in other parts of the state, and, of course, right round Australia.
Yes.
You know, enormous ones in Melbourne and Sydney. But I think we were saying earlier that they kicked above their weight, Adelaide, in terms of the per-head count of people that came out into the streets, particularly the sort of second-to-last ones, which the Premier, John Dunstan, watched from the roof of Parliament House.
Right. So it's interesting that the demonstrations got bigger, because often they tend to get smaller.
No, they got bigger. And there was a lot of street theatre as well,
mm-hmm.
street theatre yes. groups, which was very good.
And I guess there was a sense of community, of being part of a community of people.
That's right. It is an amazing feeling to be yes. in a huge crowd like that. I've thought about these huge No King rallies that have
yes.
took part over yes. Easter in the United States,
mm.
you know, where literally millions of Americans
yes.
came out
yeah.
against Trump. It is an amazing feeling to be a part of that and know that all the people around you are, you know, in the same mind and have the same feelings. Yeah.
Yes.
It is an amazing feeling.
I guess it was similar at the beginning of the Oaxaca with the big demonstration.
Yes,
the
same thing. Yeah, same.
Only I think with the Vietnam Auditorium, it in a sense succeeded. It did lead to Australia pulling out.
Yes, it did. It did.
So it felt like those demonstrations did have impact. They did impact on political opinion and Australia pulled out.
Yes.
And I think that I remember when I was at high school, the teachers had Vietnam Auditorium posters up on the walls. It was almost a badge of pride to have been involved
in that.
The
teaching fraternity in the main were anti-war.
Yes.
Particularly young teachers, not so much perhaps the older one.
Yes.
But certainly young teachers, and I was teaching at that time, despite having four kids. Yeah, so, and being involved in this. Yeah, so it was a very heady time, if you like, in terms of, you know, being politically involved in something.
It felt like that when I was growing up, because I grew up after that period and it was almost a looking back to a golden age in a sense.
Yes.
That a feeling of having missed out on something. I'm interested in the demographic, because I would say the demographic would have been quite different to, say, the demographic people protesting the Iraq War, because I think a lot of those protesters carried on being active.
Oh, sure.
Whereas at that time, older generations were far more conservative.
Mm, yes.
There was a bigger gap between young and
yes,
old.
Yes, I agree. I think that in the early 1960s in the universities, people were starting to look at a whole lot of things, not
yes.
just the war in Vietnam, but a whole lot of things about the way in which the world is governed and about, yeah, the laws that affect people and so on. And so it was just beginning, but it was only in its infancy, the beginnings of feminism and women's liberation.
Yes.
That was slowly seeding in. And a lot of that was coming from America. Ironically. It's really interesting that the anti-war movement just built up slowly and slowly. And then when you had leaders in the student movement, like Brian and Lynn, it made a big difference because they were all on campus, so they were tightly and well organised, and they really did form the leadership of that kind of movement.
Yes.
And
it was part of a massive cultural shift.
It was.
The 60s, 70s.
It was. But the women were interesting because they weren't part of that.
Right. Yeah.
What I've just described is were students. You know,
yes.
these are people in their, you know,
20s.
Late
yes.
teens, early
yes.
20s. What happened was there was a women's mothers' movement against
yes.
what was happening to 20-year-old boys. And that was what I think was very important.
Yes.
And it's not talked about much in terms of the moratorium, but it was a very important part. And the Women's League for Peace and Freedom and the Quakers were very, very involved in all of that. And there are other women's organisations involved as well. And, of course, Save Our Souls movement was paramount. And yes, they were very visual. There was a film made about them. Some of them in Victoria were jailed. And these are women in their, you know, late...
Yes, not young.
Middle
yes.
to late 40s, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was only involved with them because, you know, I wasn't a student anymore, but I was younger than them.
But I could understand having... Oh, grown up now in their 20s, sons, but if that happened to them, I would be frightened.
Yes, of course, so, of course. That's
yes.
right.
But because women's contribution often gets overlooked throughout history.
I think the other thing, too, apart from the universities, was the peace movement, which was small, but it was active.
Yes.
And there was an active peace movement, which came from the what was happening in Woomera and the atom bombs going off there. There was movements against bombing of Bikini Atoll and Christmas Island and so on. So there was a lot of anti-atomic bombing and that kind of thing. And that segued quite easily into
yes.
an anti-war movement. And I was part of that.
Yes,
yeah.
Well, that really came about, didn't it, after World War II, with the bombing of
That's
Hiroshima
right.
and Nagasaki, and the realisation that it's civilians that are paying the price, that it's civilians that are being targeted.
That's right. Not, That's right.
And
what's happening today?
Yes.
Iraq and
Yes,
Gaza
that's right.
And Lebanon.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly the same.
It's civilians paying the price over and over.
It is civilians. And in Vietnam, it
yes.
was the civilians.
That's right.
In the main. Yes.
Which the famous photo
yes.
of the child.
That's right.
Which
the
really...
Agent Orange had just burnt all her clothes off.
Yeah. yeah.
Mm. The injuries that Agent Orange inflicted were absolutely shocking. I mean, it was totally in breach of the Geneva Convention.
Yes.
Totally,
yeah. But even, you know, to their own soldiers.
Yeah, I've just got something here that I think is interesting. The incidence of crippling wounds and amputations was 300% higher in this war than those suffered in World War II. Amazing.
Yes.
And 61% of those killed or injured were under 21. I mean, they're shocking figures.
They are.
That is shocking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the use of landmines is absolutely
dreadful.
Yeah. And still, those landmines, some of them are still
yeah.
there.
Still know, yeah. Vietnamese farmers getting blown
yes.
up in their fields. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, well, is there anything more you'd like to share?
Oh, I've talked about the film Harvest of Fear, A History of Australia's Vietnam War by John Murphy, which describes the anti-war groups like this Save Our Souls groups, and I quote, distinctly genteel, concerned with respectability, with a strong faith in liberal democracy and the piercing light of rational argument. And I've added that I think that's a little unfair and simplistic. Most of those women were not political at all, had never had any political experience until their sons were sort of sent off to war. They were quick learners, in my experience, and became creative and courageous activists in a very short time, despite their lack of experience at the beginning. A number of unions also, I didn't mention this, but a number of unions came on board, particularly the waterside workers and the Seamen's Union. And in particular, the Seamen's Union stopped a freighter called the Jiparit from taking equipment to the war and produced a coloured leaflet showing the horrendous effects of napalm bombing on the bodies of children. And the Australian Government Workers Union, through its secretary, had their members, who were prison officers, refuse to imprison conscientious objectors. So that's interesting.
It is.
And I've mentioned that the Quakers, many of them in the Uniting Church as well, a lot of churches came out, particularly Protestant churches came out against the war. Yeah. I'll just read this too. Though not directly a part of the radical youth counterculture, the women of the Save Our Sons movement educated themselves and others on the situation in Vietnam and on the laws associated with conscription and conscientious objection. In the process, their politics became increasingly radical, proving that the personal is political.
Yes. I think that's a lovely line to finish on. And I think that encapsulates the whole movement. So thank you very much for sharing all that with us, Judy.
Thank you.
That's
my
wonderful
pleasure.
Insights. Thank you.
This interview recorded by the Gawler Broadcasting Association, is available for download for purposes of educational research. We expect that any written or electronic work derived from the recording gives due credit to the interviewee, interviewer, and GBA.